Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to Learn Lives and Powers. This is Scott Powers with Mark Lazarus, both of The Athletic. Mark, Monday morning, camp, training camp, 4 days away. You ready? Ready for 12th season, huh? Crazy.
It's weird that technically the season training camp doesn't start till Thursday. It feels like we've already been here for a couple of weeks talking about all this stuff. And, you know, we've been to the rink a few times with prospect camp. And is it a bad sign that I'm already ready for like a break?
Actually, Ben Pope and I were talking about at the airport yesterday. We're saying that it was only a 2-day trip to Minneapolis, but it felt really long, of whether that was a bad sign for the season. And I think the season has like its different flow, and the prospect stuff was a little bit different, where there was so much emphasis on one. We'll get into that, but just there was one game that was really important, one that was not so important. The second one, you could tell that everyone was a little bit more tired. So
I think we're just rusty, right? Because you got to get into midseason form. It's like the first time you hit the ice in the fall after taking the summer off.
Yeah, right? We've been wearing shorts right all now. Summer, so we're in sweaters again back in the rink and layering up. And
I wrote a story yesterday, and it's not Blackhawks related, though there's a Blackhawk quoted in it, that's going to run on Tuesday morning. And man, I couldn't write. Like, I sat down and I'm sitting there and I'm writing, and I watched the Bears game, and then I start to write. And usually I can knock out a 2,000 word feature in like an hour and a half. Like, that's the one marketable skill I have, is I write really, really fast. I was sitting in that room, and the Giants comeback distracted me. The dog came in and distracted me. The cat came in and distracted me. The kids came in and distracted me. It took me like 5 hours to write the story, which is like excruciating for me. It's like I completely forgot how to write.
So is that a good or bad sign, do you think? Or
I think it's a bad sign. Like, usually, you know, I talk to my daughter about this a lot when she has like a writing assignment. I'm like, if you're like into what you're writing, it's going to happen real fast. Yeah, and
it's different for different people, though. Like, some people take forever, and they need to rework it and rewrite, and, you know.
Yeah, that's not how I am. That's not how I operate. So when it does start getting that way, I start getting concerned that I'm writing a big pile of shit.
Yeah. All right, well, go out.
We'll find out.
Having said
go
that,
read my story read Tuesday Mike's morning.
Mark's story on Tuesday. So I was in Minneapolis for the weekend. Went to we were practices last week, and then Minneapolis for the games on Saturday and Sunday. And I certainly had some questions about Bedard playing, and I talked to some people in the organization about why they wanted him to play, and their main reasoning was that they didn't want to have as much as he's treated differently off the ice. They want to make sure that he's not treated any differently on the ice, and then that other players resent him, and also that he feels more isolated or special. And, you know, he was pushing them to play both games, and he certainly wanted to be out there. And, but it's still, you're curious, you know, like you were curious of what, how good he was going to be. Like, you knew that he was better than the prospects out there, but it's noticeable where he must've had 20 shot attempts. It was, I think they recorded him for 11 shots on goal in the game. And then, you know, no one else has, you know, like everyone else is like a handful of shot attempts. And the next day it's, you know, like it's even more noticeable how much, at least at that level of those players. I mean, there's probably only a handful of NHL players on that ice. But just how far above beyond he is of those players. And, you know, and just the way he scored and with the release and, you know, to have a hat trick, and everyone I talked to, you know, kind of feels like he's going to have to make an adjustment to NHL, where even guys like Austin Matthews and Nathan MacKinnon, all these guys had to make adjustments to NHL. But also people are curious of what he looks like playing beside more skilled players that can play with him. And, you know, so it was probably the perfect debut, and certainly doesn't squash the hype around him.
Yeah, that first goal he scored where he kind of did like almost like a toe drag mid-shot. Like, that's what people are talking about when they're talking about his release and that super whippy stick he's got, and just the things he can do and the way he can be deceptive with his shot. That's an NHL shot. That is an elite NHL shot. He's going to enter the league with like one of the 5 or 10 best shots in the league at age 18. Yeah. Like, that is ready-made and built. It's the rest of the game.
I think there was 1.6 million views on the video or something like that.
Sounds about right. Yeah, and so, first of all, shout out to Joe Brand and Charlie Romeliotis. They did a great job doing the broadcast there. Charlie, just the multimedia superstar now.
He is now.
Joe's got a good play-by-play. They did well. They made that pretty watchable. But yeah, it's really something to see. The question is, can he find open space in the NHL? Can he fight his way through traffic? Can he handle the puck in the NHL? If the puck is on his stick, he's going to score a bunch of goals. Like, that's without question. The question is, can he do the other things when he's playing against NHL players as opposed to mid-tier Minnesota Wild prospects or Blues prospects, whatever it was? Like, he's a man amongst boys in that setting, but he's going to be a boy against men when he gets to the NHL, and that's where we have to see. No one has any doubt that this kid's not going to, he's going to be good. It's just a matter of how good and how quickly he can be good.
The story that I want to do probably here in the next few weeks, and I talked to Daryl Belfry about it the other day, was there aren't many on stick shooters in the NHL. There's probably a handful of Austin Matthews. He mentioned Barkov, a couple guys that don't need to be passed to create their own shot. You know, guys like DeBrincat and so many other guys need someone to pass it to them. As much as they dominated at one level, when they get to the NHL, like, it just, the NHL doesn't work that way. You need so many guys that distribute the puck and set you up. I mean, we're certainly coming sharp in those guys. Like, it's so much is done off the pass that there are so few guys that that are those on stick shooters. And, you know, Belfry said that even Austin Matthews, since the start of his career, he's changed his shot 3 different times. You know, like, there's a constant evolution. So it'll be interesting, because Bedard dominates the puck, and that's how he does a lot of things he does. And it works against his peers now, because they all sort of defer to him and just let him kind of handle the puck, and they're always looking for him. But when it's Taylor Hall, or when it's guys who are used to having the puck themselves, and, you know, operating a little bit different, like, there aren't many guys. You know, certainly haven't covered Kane in that, but Kane moves the puck and he's moving himself. And I think that's one adjustment or two adjustments for Bedard is, one, you know, finding his shot in different ways and maybe having to play off the puck to get the puck back. And then how much is done without it, right? Like, can he give up the puck and let someone else handle a little bit too? And yeah, I think those are the type of adjustments where you're so used to dominating and so used to getting the quantity and the puck possession so much, where it just doesn't work that way for many guys at the NHL level, where they're two other guys usually don't like to sit around and watch you kind of, you know, handle the puck and figure it out for 15 seconds. And then I'm curious if, you know, man, but it also could work the other way, where he really, you know, if he's smart and if he understands Taylor Hall or Tyler Johnson, that he could, you know, be even given, created better opportunities than he's already having.
Well, remember, Patrick Kane scored 62 goals in his 1 year at the London Knights in the OHL. So he came in with a similar pedigree to Bedard in terms of this guy scores goals. And then he came into the league and he was a pass first guy. He was a playmaker, a distributor, because he didn't have that confidence in his shot. He only had, what, 21 goals his first year, 25 his second, 30 his third. I mean, Kane didn't become a goal scorer until his 30s, really, when he really started taking over the game and doing everything himself. Bedard, you know, seeing him get that many shot attempts and, you know, never mind the goals, just the aggressive way he plays in terms of shooting the puck. That's what the Blackhawks want to see. They don't want him to come in and be a playmaker. They don't want him to defer to Taylor Hall. They want him to step in and take control. And he doesn't seem to have any problem doing that. We'll see when he gets to the NHL level again. But Taylor Hall is going to be content to rack up assists if that's how it works. You know, Tyler Johnson is not a puck hog or anyone like that.
It doesn't feel like Taylor Hall is completely his game, though, either. You know, like, he's another guy who likes to shoot the puck and shoots the quantity. So, like, it'll be
interesting. They'll be enough to go around, but they want – I think Taylor Hall understands the assignment. His assignment is to, you know, get the best out of Connor Bedard and build up his confidence and make him a star. And if he does that, he's going to get a shit ton of points. And in 2 years, he's going to get one last really big contract. So he understands the assignment. He's not going to defer to Bedard, but he's not going to demand that Bedard defer to him either. So I think that's a good matchup for him, a good partner. And Bedard is going to be more of a goal scorer early in his career than Kane was. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. And I think Kane, even entering, like, as good as he was in the OHL, like, he was, like, his game, his shot wasn't like that. Like, it sort of evolved, and, you know, he was, you know, he kind of became a guy that, like, learned how to score off the pass too. And, I know we've talked about it. I think we're both kind of think Tyler Johnson makes sense for that line, but I do think they need someone who's going to distribute, because as much as Taylor Hall may look the pass of the Bedard, like, his strength is his shot, you know, like, that's been often his game throughout his career. So, you know, like, often you don't see guys that probably Bedard and Hall on the same line, the guys that shoot like that, and, you know, that are more on stick shooters. And so it'll be interesting where just finding the guy that sort of complements them and, you know, can win those pucks back and to set them up. But it was impressive. He was above and beyond everyone else. And I think the other person that stood out throughout the, you know, the camp and the games, or at least the one game he played, was Wyatt Kaiser, where I think it was Bedard and Kaiser 1-2 pretty easily, where I thought Colton Dock and Korchinski were maybe that next tier. But I think Kaiser is the Blackhawks' best defenseman prospect. You know, he's a little bit older than Korchinski right now, but just the way that he handled the puck, and just, he was aggressive offensively, and he's a little bit smaller, but he's really feisty, and he understands how to play, and he skates so well, where not that his ceiling's higher than Korchinski's, but I think his development is further along than Korchinski's, where I don't know if he necessarily gets his power play opportunities or a different thing, but I think he really opened some eyes of what, that he may be ready for the NHL, and where they thought maybe you're in Rockford or that type of thing, we're playing those minutes. But I thought he was the most impressive player outside of Bedard.
Well, that's what you want to see too. You want to see Bedard dominate because he's Connor Bedard, but you want to see Wyatt Kaiser, who's 21 years old. He got 9 games in the NHL last year. You want him to be at a higher level than these average prospects are. Like, that's the Blackhawks got everything they wanted out of this weekend. The guys that were supposed to be good were good. The guys that were supposed to be dominant were dominant. I mean, it's what you want to see in a tournament like this. Nobody got hurt, and your best players were your best players and looked like they were at a higher level. And a guy like Kaiser, it's going to be interesting because, you know, we've talked about this a lot. It's pretty crowded on that blue line, and Korchinski's going to get a chance out of the gate. And you think, you know, Vlasic is probably ahead of Kaiser on the depth chart, but Kaiser's ceiling feels higher than Vlasic's. Like, Vlasic, he's just, like, going to be one of those, like, steady, you know, number four defenseman type who can play a good, simple, clean game. And you desperately need guys like that, especially on the Blackhawks these days. Yeah. But Kaiser is a much more exciting and interesting prospect. And if Kaiser has a really good camp, you know, it's very possible he makes a team out of camp and Vlasic starting in Rockford.
I think the one thing that Kaiser has going for him is that he can play the right side, and he feels like he's comfortable. He played there one game in the NHL last season. So, I wonder if both of them, you know, maybe all three of them make it. It's probably expediting what they thought this season, but I think Korchinski, they're going to burn the contract, whether he stays in Chicago. I think Vlasic's proven he's ready. And if Kaiser is playing like that, it's hard to, you know, to keep him down and say Tenorti or whomever. So
Zaitsev. I mean, how do you play Nikita Zaitsev over one of these guys if they're ready? Right.
like all of a sudden, like it could be something where it's like Krichinsky, Jones, Vlasic, Murphy, or something, and then, you know, Tenorti and Kaiser, you know, or, you know, like it, I'm curious what it, because I don't think they necessarily need to play Zaitsev, you know, like he's more there for the contract than anything. And if he's, you know, they brought back Tenorti because they thought it was reliable, and I think they didn't want to rush any of these young guys. But if these young guys prove that they're ready, then I think you need to give them that chance. And, you know, Vlasic spent that last season. He deserves an opportunity to come out of the gate to play. And, you know, if Kaiser's taken that step, then I don't think there's much benefit for him playing in Rockford if he can play in the NHL. And Korchinski's obviously can't play in Rockford because of his contract and when he was drafted. So, it's interesting where that defense is, I think, arriving a lot quicker than the Blackhawks thought. And, it's probably a good problem for them to have, you know, where, you know, all of a sudden you got to sit veterans. It's not a terrible thing.
What was your impression of Colton Dock? He's like an interesting guy who, you know, looks like he could be a decent, you know, middle six player if things pan out.
Yeah, I think the thing that they've really, pushed on him was that he needs to be physical. They have guys who can score. They guys that can distribute. They need someone that can be that power forward. So, you know, he talked a lot about that. He spoke before the game on Saturday in the morning skates, and he was talking about being physical, and he went out there and did it, where he was was hard on the puck, and he was, you know, pushing guys. And certainly, you know, when you're playing Bedard and that kind of type of guy, like, you need to be a little bit more of the aggressor. And I thought he looked really good. He was stripping some pucks, and he scored a couple goals, had some assists. He seemed like he complimented that line well, so he can play with that speed. He certainly evolved as a player, and he's got a pretty good shot. And, you know, they're asking him to play the wing, and he's played a little center and wing. So when you look at, you know, Nazar and certainly Bedard and Reichel and Moore, and, you know, there's a little, you know, mostly guys on the smaller side, and they're going to want to have some guys who can win those puck backs and play different roles. So there's an opportunity for Dock, and I thought he I don't think he starts in the NHL by any means, but I think, you know, he's one of those first call up guys, and he can have a really chance in the future with this team, where he sort of fits what they need. So if he can keep on developing and play that type of game, he's definitely another intriguing prospect for them.
What's got to be exciting if you're Kyle Davidson or just any old Blackhawks fan is that there's so many of these guys now all of a sudden where you think, like, that have that potential. There's more. There's Nazar. Obviously, there's Bedard. You could throw Dock in there. There's a lot of number one picks still to come. And you start thinking, you're at a point now where they don't all have to hit, right? If three or four of these guys hit, you're going to have a hell of a top six for a very long time under team control, and a window is going to start opening. So that's what's, you know, this is Kyle Davidson's plan all along, obviously, was just to rack up enough picks.
He only had to bat like 500 instead of having to bat 1,000. And that made a huge difference. And all of a sudden, you know, you can start making that next step.
I think, you know, I was even thinking about that too, where as much as you're looking at Bedard and, you know, the top prospects who are at this game, that three first round picks were in college, you know, where Nazar, Moore and Rinzel, even, where I think, you know, when you start talking about the defenseman, and if Rinzel's the, you know, the dark horse, where he's the guy who they knew it was going to take a little bit longer, but the fact they drafted him in the first round, he's going to Minnesota, he's going to get some chances, probably has a couple of years in college, but all of a sudden, if Rinzel on the right side too pans out, that defense is something, and they have a lot of prospects, and this was the plan. And, you know, if they can hit on, you certainly want to hit on the first rounders, but, you know, guys like, Doc, who's a second rounder, but even, you know, guys like Kantsarov and, Lardis, who was a third round pick, looked like he can play with speed with Bedard, and he scored, you know, on a breakaway yesterday. And, there's a lot of guys like Ryan Green and, I think, you know, Safonov is kind of another guy who's gone under the radar in Russia, and he's played really well. And so, yeah, there's a lot of guys, and it'll be, you know, now you're starting to see some of those guys come into the system, or even like Ryder Ralston, who, kind of under the radar prospect, you know,
he can skate.
Yeah. Like he's got a nice shot. He, you know, talking to him that he's convinced that he can be a better pro than college player, just for some of his attributes. So, you know, he had a pretty good week, and you know, none of those guys have to be top six guys necessarily. Maybe, you know, someone like Ryan Green has a chance, but, you know, if you get enough of those guys to be top nine, or, you know, guys like Lewinsky or Savoie to be bottom six guys who just really fit that bill and maybe have a little offensive upside, you know, guys like, you know, definitely Savoie and, you know, even, you know, Felchman, and, you know, there's enough guys that they've drafted over to, over the second, third, you know, fourth rounds over the years that have a chance, and you don't need all of them to click, but if enough do, and I mean, that was the plan all along, is that they, you know, they obviously want those first rounds of quality, but enough quantity too, where, you know, that not everyone has to come through.
Well, those later round guys too, they're the ones that have to fill in the gaps, right? Like a guy like Samuel Savoie, obviously, you know, he's not going to have the offensive ceiling of some of these, of Moore, Nazar, Bedard, but you can't all be speedy goal scoring guys. You need to have some, you know, some sandpaper in there, as they say, and all the cliches. You need guys that can fill in the gaps and be the Andrew Shaw of the next generation, that can be these guys that can be irritants, that can throw the body around a little bit. And, you know, that tends to come from those later round picks, because a guy like Oliver Moore, you don't want him throwing his body around. You want him flying up the ice and setting up and scoring goals. So that's where those guys really come into play, is, you know, can you bring something to the table that's different? You know, you're not going to come in and score 35 goals, but can you bring some kind of element that this team's going to lack? Because you can't have everyone be a skill player. You know, that's where your Mackenzie Entwistles and your Reese Johnsons, if they're going to have any chance of sticking around through this next step where all these young guys start coming in, all these top prospects start breaking in, it's going to have to be that way. Like, they're going to have to be provide something that all these super skill guys are not providing.
When you mentioned Entwistle and Johnson, might maybe a good segue to kind of preview camp. And I think that's, for me, for one of the interesting things entering camp, is that the Blackhawks have too many forwards that make, you know, make the roster. Yes. Where and there's a bunch of guys who have to go through waivers. And if certainly the guys like Cole Gutman are healthy, that you think they would, you know, probably get precedent over, you know, some of the other guys that are kind of, you know, probably more in the bubble. So, yeah, I think for me, that's one of the big things, is where, you know, like, even, you know, I was putting together a list of guys for, you know, who were entering camp, and it's like, well, there's a lot of forwards there. And
yeah, you forget they have like Ryan Donato now, and Corey Perry, right? And Nick Foligno, and you still got Athanasiu, and Colin Blackwell still around. You know, all of a sudden it's like, it's Boris Kachuk and Taylor Ratt. It's crowded in there right now.
Yeah.
Like, there's too many veteran forwards. And if this is going to be your big transition year to the next generation, it might be one or two veteran forwards too many.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, because as much as like the defense is young and Soderblom's coming, like, among the forwards, there aren't a whole lot of guys that are, you know, Reichel's certainly in there. But beyond that, like, guys that are definitely part of the future, you know, like, this
it's
is a roster.
Reichel, probably. Bedard, Gutman, maybe Radish, maybe. Yeah. Like, that's really, yeah. And Kurashev.
Yeah. And even now, like, I think Kurashev's contract puts a little bit more pressure on him, where it's odd when you do arbitration, because like, you're like you bring out all the awful things about your player, you know, like, and then you'd be like, oh, but we still want you. And I think that through going through this, the Blackhawks' eyes were opened a little bit, that Kurashev hasn't produced a ton in his career, you know, like, he's been pretty consistent, but for him to fit in, I think, and especially if he, you know, like, this is one contract for 2 years, and for him to get another contract and get a pay raise, and for them not to walk away from and try to trade him, is that he's going to have to be more consistent and figure out his own role on this team. Because I don't think, as much as he's given opportunities playing top six, I don't think he's a top six guy.
He's one of those players that looks the part, but he's had enough of an opportunity now that I think he is what he is. He's never going to all of a sudden become a 25, 30 goal guy.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, if he can figure out how to be like a Frolik, or, you know, like one of those guys that just, who brings a little bit of offense, but does enough for everything else. And, so yeah, I mean, and Radish is really interesting too. I think one, we're still waiting on what happens with that Team Canada report, and I think for him and Kachuk, you know, we just don't know enough about, you know, what happened, and certainly the investigation's going on. So I do think the Blackhawks loaded up on players a little bit, just not knowing on what may happen with those two players. And we're here, you know, like, the fact that we're here on Monday and camp opens up on Thursday, like, it's, I know the NHL wants to take their time and do this right, but it's not a perfect situation for anyone for this to come out at after camp starts. So I think that we're still waiting, but Radish, you know, he's another guy who, you know, I think he has the shot, and he has some attributes where maybe he fits in, but yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how some of those guys adapt and how some of those roles fit. And I think Soderblom, for me too, is a really interesting case, where I think they're projecting him to be the number one. And You know, the guy of the future, and he'll get his first real crack at being the starter, where I think, you know, they'll give him some more starts than Mrazek. And you know, Kamesa looked really good in at the prospect thing too. I know that he feels like he's taking another stride too. So I know that they I mean, they're hopeful that Kamesa and Soderblom are the guys of the future. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, like, it's even the guys they brought in are not necessarily long term pieces, but they're, you know, like Corey Perry and the Blackhawks is still kind of weird to me.
Still so. Weird. It's going to be interesting too, because like if they come out and it's just an awful team right off the bat, which it very well could be, mm-hmm. even with all the excitement around it, this could be really bad. And if in the middle of November they're really bad, they're probably going to want to ride Peter Mrazek into the top five draft pick again, right? But if they come out and they're more competitive than people think, which is entirely possible, you never know. This is the NHL. Then maybe the priority shift, and it's not necessarily about making the playoffs, but it's about being, you know, then it becomes about like, is Arvid Soderblom your guy? Can he carry a team and make them competitive? And some of these other guys get to play more meaningful games and meaningful roles. I think the idea coming into the season is it's another tank job. But it's not as overt. It's not as aggressive. They're not like insisting on it. Like yeah. they're not trying to tank. I think they're of the belief that, hey, if we suck this year, more power to us. That's good for us. But they're not going to start actively sabotaging the team to do that unless it's painfully obvious that they're just overmatched in this league. So these first, you know, 6 weeks, this opening road trip is a pretty brutal road trip with Pittsburgh and Boston and Montreal and Toronto and Colorado. I mean, they could be 0-5-0. With a negative 30 goal differential by the end of that week. And then all of a sudden we're looking at the season differently already. But if they're competitive throughout that, if they pull out a couple of wins, you start thinking, well, maybe, you know, you don't want, you want to build a winning culture. You want to give Luke Richardson a chance to get these guys into the right mindset. You might get more aggressive in terms of playing the kids, getting Soderblom in there and not actively sabotaging this team.
I'm convinced that they're just going to let, like, the plan has to be around development this year. Like, it has to be doing what's best for the kids. And if it's playing Soderblom a whole lot and he's getting, you know, he's getting rocked, then you have to kind of push through it. I you know, last year I thought they played the win, and I think they're going to do the same this year. They obviously weren't good enough. And, you know, I think, you know, every season there's optimism around the team, and you're like, all of a sudden you can talk yourself, and you're like, oh, Bedard, you know, Bedard scores two goals a game and Hall's back to this. And if Kaiser,
I think I wrote
like
a
that,
column in October of last year saying, what if the Blackhawks are too good to tank? So it's easy to get fooled.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm sure we'll overreact to whatever happens on that first road trip. But I think it has to be, you know, I think last year it was, you know, the fact that you didn't have a lot of kids, that there wasn't really, you know, there wasn't any pressure. Like, you just, they, I think Luke Richardson tried to win, and he didn't really have to think about developing a whole lot. You know, as the season went on, you saw some younger guys come in. But I think this year, you know, like, if Gutman looks like he can play in the NHL, and if it means, you know, putting someone through waivers that you didn't expect to, I think you have to do what's best for the development of the players and yeah. putting those guys. And if Kaiser, Vlasic, and Korchinski all deserve to be in the NHL, then you need to do that. And you want those guys to take, they're going to take some lumps, and maybe it is like, you do keep, maybe you keep, you know, eight defensemen, because you know that maybe there's times where you sit those guys, or, you know, you want to work through it. But I don't think the fix is always going to be sending guys to Rockford or, you know, putting them through that. I think the luxury you have right now is that there are no expectations, you know, like, you can have them work out some of their issues in the NHL, and you can give them a ton of ice time on the power play and put them in all these different situations where you don't want them overwhelmed. But if they can play at this level, then you can have them. Yeah, you can kind of push them a little bit. And I think that's, you know, for me, that'll be one of the more interesting parts of Luke Richardson's job this year, where last year, you know, he proved that he can implement a culture and he can get guys to probably exceed expectations and certainly work hard. And now it's about developing players and giving guys, putting guys maybe in tough spots, but then having worked through it. And you certainly want Bedard and, you know, all these young guys to be better players at the end of the season and more accustomed to the NHL, where a year from now, they don't have to go through that again. So I think, yeah, I tend to still think that the Blackhawks are going to struggle, just because it is a young team, and certainly other spots in the lineup, there's guys that are probably, you know, just can't match up against other teams. But I think that, yeah, maybe at times they surprise guys, because there are guys with a lot of, you know, young guys have a lot of upside, you know, and you certainly see around the league where players are given these type of opportunities, and sometimes they shine pretty quickly.
Yeah, and then the good news for the Blackhawks is they have the leash. Like last year, everybody understood what was going on. The fans were on board with the rebuild, the tank. This year, you bring in Bedard. You got Korchinski in the lineup, and all of a sudden, you got things to cling on to as a fan. And that can kind of bring us to our next topic, which is last week, we both had separate meetings with Danny Wirtz and Jamie Faulkner, who did their whirlwind Chicago media tour day. And it's one of the things I talked with Jamie Faulkner about is the ticket sales. And, you know, last year, the team was surprised in a good way, not like shocked or anything, but like just how good attendance was last year, just even though the team was so bad and the season was so kind of pointless. And so many of these guys were just passing through injury, veteran stop gaps, things like that. You know, they were hoping to get 14,000 a game just to break even. And they wound up averaging 17,000-18,000 most nights and some big nights. That's probably going to be even better this year, obviously, because of the Bedard of it all. And, you know, they might not sell out every game, but they're going to have sellouts. They're going to probably get an 18,000-19,000 a night, which is a lot of people. That's would sell out most arenas in the NHL. Mm-hmm. People forget how cavernous the United Center is the biggest arena in the league by far. They get that leeway. And, you know, the Hawks realize that. And Jamie Faulkner is well aware of how fortunate they are in terms of the ticket sales and that this fan base showed up and now they have more to sell. Like they're expecting a pretty good, healthy year in terms of attendance, and it's not that dependent on how good they are. That's a huge advantage for a team to be able to sell a product, even though that product is technically bad.
Yeah,
but it's going to be exciting because you're in that new era.
Yeah, I think part of it last year, I mean, you still had some star power, right? Like if they didn't have Bedard this year, I would have questioned, because I'm not sure people are coming out for Reichel and Korchinski. No. Like it's interesting, but to go from Kane and Taves to all of a sudden be able to replace them immediately,
they're
like
it's so stupidly fortunate. You know? It's like Pittsburgh going from, you know, Lemieux to Crosby. I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's and I think it speaks to also where the Blackhawks fan base, you know, or even just hockey in Chicago, where certainly the Blackhawks had to get to that point, and there's a lot of people who missed out on Blackhawks tickets for so long. So the opportunities to come to see Kane and Taves. And, you know, I know Faulkner talked about just trying to be able to, you know, allow people to afford to get into the building. And right now that's, you know, it's still something they're able to do because there's demand, but it's not, you know, like they don't have like, you know, I think in the past, like season tickets were so high in demand that it was harder for people to get those secondary tickets. And
well, they're capping season tickets at a lower number this year. So they could have more walk-up tickets. Now, still it's going to, if you have a family of four between parking tickets and food, it's like a $700 night. Like it is an insanely expensive thing.
Oh, for sure,
I don't take my family to Cubs games. It's too expensive. We go to Sox games for like $40. You get like a hot dog, you get parking, you get a ticket. It's great. Like it's catastrophically expensive to go to some of these sporting events, and the Blackhawks are still going to be that way. But the last couple of years, it's been kind of this nice little perk of sucking has been that so many people have been able to get in the building that couldn't in the past, because you could buy tickets for $20 on the secondary market. And that's going to get a little harder, but that helps sustain the fan base and help mint new fans coming into this new era. So it all, you know, as bad as things have been the last few years, and oh my God, have they been bad the last few years around Chicago, they've been fortunate in a lot of ways, and they're set up pretty well for the future in terms of on and off the ice.
It was interesting that they've also tried to identify who ticket brokers are and you know, stopping them from purchasing, you know, bulk tickets. So I think they've been pretty proactive in trying to keep ticket sales, you know, lower and getting people an opportunity. And certainly, it's still expensive to go to a game. But I will say, if you have an opportunity to probably, you know, get in earlier than later this year, then just I think the Bedard effect will rise tickets. And you know, I think as the season goes, like it could be, I think more people are going to notice Bedard and trying to get the game. So, we sort of coordinated what we were going to talk about, and I talked, something more. I'm going to, you know, we'll both sort of have stories to write still, but I talked to them more about growing the game in Chicago and knowing that, Bedard and winning is going to bring fans back into the building. And the Blackhawks have sort of done that. They did it for a long time and they sold out the building and they had, you know, huge fans. But how do you continue to grow the game and to diversify it? And so we talked about a lot of different things and about the logo too. And they have no plans on changing the logo. They've doubled down and they feel like they're putting in the education, they're putting in the time with, you know, going to Oklahoma and spending time and trying to educate people about Blackhawk the person. And And you know, I had asked if they thought that was limiting to it at all to their fans. And, you know, they feel like what they're doing is, they feel like they can do justice by Blackhawk and the indigenous people. So I think for anyone that was sort of thinking that if, you know, Danny was taking over, that something was going to change, it doesn't appear to be the case. We also discussed about, you know, the expansion of Fifth Third Arena and they're certainly trying to make hockey more accessible for people in Chicago and some of the efforts there of just getting more ice time. And I know they're going to try to do more free clinics and different things just to give more people opportunity to play hockey. You know, having grown up in Chicago myself, like it wasn't there weren't many rinks and there weren't many opportunities. And you know, I didn't grow up with hockey and certainly came about it later in life. But so yeah, I think the Blackhawks are mindful of knowing that, you know, it's one thing to sell out the United Center, but I think they want to, you know, grow the fan base more than that and certainly grow the game. So it'll be interesting in the coming years how that evolves and how they kind of can, you know, stay that path, even as maybe the building's being sold out and a lot of those things come back that they've been used to.
Yeah, I don't want to give away a column too much that I'll be writing in the near future, but it was interesting talking to Danny, who's now the owner of the team. He is the chairman. He is, you know, has taken over the team from his father. I know the Wirtz family technically owns the team, but he is nominally the owner now. I'm curious to see what kind of owner he is. Is he going to be active? Is he going to try to affect league policy? Rocky held a lot of sway in the big rooms with all the other owners. Bill before him, Arthur before him. These are some of the most prominent figures in hockey history. Is Danny going to be that kind of owner, or is he going to be more passive? I'm curious to see how that goes and how he manages to kind of break into the old boys club, because, you know, it's one thing to be a billionaire who's been around billionaires your whole life. It's another thing to be in that room with those billionaires. Those are some heavy hitters in there, like Jeremy Jacobs and guys like that. So I'm curious to see what kind of owner Danny Wirtz is going to be. In terms of the Blackhawks, he wants pretty much status quo. I mean, obviously, we've talked about all the stuff they're doing to improve the workplace culture with the Blackhawks. But in terms of the investment in the team, it's not like he's going to start pulling back and going back to the dollar bill ways. He saw what Rocky did, pouring money into the team, the positive effect that can have, and the money you can make, you know, spend money to make money. So there'll be some continuity there in terms of, you know, this being a first-class organization, the way it treats players and, you know, all that stuff. It should be more of the same, generally speaking, which is no surprise because, again, Rocky made a lot of money owning the Blackhawks.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Despite his protestations about how much money he was losing on the Blackhawks.
We put out for questions. I know there was one question about the whole Babcock situation in Columbus. And that sort of things kind of transpired there.
That escalated quickly, huh?
Yeah, right.
Hey, first of all, you know, I mean, we're hard on Barstool Sports a lot around here for a lot of good reasons. And the Spit and Chicklets podcast is part of that network. But full credit to Paul Bissonnette and those guys, because Biz has an interesting role in the NHL where he is the media now as a part of the TNT set and as, you know, the guy who's on the biggest podcast in the country for hockey. But he's also got the players' ears. The players trust him. They know him. They like him. And they clearly were telling him things that they weren't necessarily running up the flagpole in their own organization. So Biz going out there, putting the story out there and then doubling down on it, standing by what he said, even when, you know, some of those kind of mealy mouth statements came out about how everyone liked
it. The way that he stands behind it is a little bit strange, though. Like, I as TNT, like, it has to make them cringe being like, this guy's.
But this is TNT. This is, you know, you think about the way they do the NBA, too. They're very critical of the league and the NBA.
I guess the way that he explained how he was, there's the players' podcast, and that if you come after the players, he's going to. You know, like with no
group
and all
this.
Like,
he's gonna be Biz.
Little,
I mean,
it's a little bit over the top.
For better or worse, it's a little over the top. But it's you know, without him, Mike Babcock probably is still the coach. And there's
for sure.
You know, young players who are feeling uncomfortable in that locker room. And you and I have spent a lot of time the last couple of years talking about power dynamics in the locker room, in the wake of all the Kyle Beach allegations and everything. And this isn't as severe an example of that, but it's a perfect example of that where. This is a guy who's making his players uncomfortable by asking him, forcing them to put their pick their go through their camera. I mean, I saw, you know, Brock McGillis had an interesting tweet. He says, like, what if there's a closeted player in there? What if he has pictures that he doesn't want Mike Babcock to see?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of it's a dicey thing. And I know some people think that it's overreacting and canceling, but No, I mean, you can't do this stuff in the modern age. And this just shows that you got to stop hiring people and expecting different results, right? And this comes back to Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman and Bill Peters. And are there really no other fucking options? Yeah. Is there nobody else that could coach your team? Is there nobody else that could be a GM? Why do you have to keep going back to the same well when that well has been proven to fail? Like, second chances are real. Second chances, fine. But the risk you take on some of these, it's so unnecessary. What was Mike Babcock going to the Columbus Blue Jackets that a million other coaches couldn't have done? Without the baggage, without the risk, without the old way of doing things. At some point, you got to move on from these people.
You know what's odd is it just there was no evolution to Mike Babcock, right? Like, you know, everyone's looking at you and going to dissect everything you do. And I don't know. I feel like you'd want to run everything by someone to make sure that, you know, is this appropriate? Am I, you know, like, I certainly, you know, I don't think Joel Quenneville or Stan Bowman should be hired, but they put in a lot of time for the education. So I'm curious of what they've learned and what they're going to say at some point. They need to speak. And you know, I know they spoke to the coaches and GMs, but I think a lot of people want to hear, I guess them coming out and saying sorry for how things transpired and what they did or didn't do. And, you know, their lack of action, but also what they've learned in this process. And so I think that's the scary thing too, is that, you know, Babcock does this and certainly, you know, that of his history and he comes out and does it and thinks this is okay. And, I don't know. Columbus Blue Jackets don't seem like they've cared a whole lot about culture or those type of things, or what people going against what people have kind of questioned with their hirings and this old school approach, and now they're paying the price, and certainly I think, you know, I think Yarmo and that staff there certainly has a lot of there's a lot of question marks around them, and Portsline wrote about it today. Just
Ian Mendez also, I mean, read both those columns because they're both spot on about, like, how many chances do you get? Like, at what point is the problem higher up? It's the hirers, not the hirees.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, it's
hockey, right? It's just, well, it's Mike Babcock. It's not 20 years ago anymore. He's not a modern day coach in any respect.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want a guy who did his best works 20 years ago when the league was so different? Why would you want that guy to be in charge, especially a team like Columbus that's got all these great young prospects? You know, you got Cole Sillinger and Kent Johnson and you got Fantilli, and it's like, everything is so good around this team. And you look at their prospect. I mean, Fantilli was even more impressive than Bedard maybe at up in Traverse City, and everything is going great. And then you just shoot yourself in the foot. It's just so unnecessary. There are so many good coaches out there waiting for their opportunity. And all we do is just retread after retread. I had a friend ask me, how the hell does Peter Laviolette keep getting jobs? What is Peter Laviolette? And this is a totally different thing, where just Peter Laviolette's just a stale coach who's, why would you keep going back? Like, the Rangers hire Peter Laviolette instead of getting interesting, bringing someone new, giving someone a chance. It's just so, it's so hockey, man. It's just so hockey.
Well, it's they think of the game in one certain way, and they feel like these guys are trusted. And that's why you have, like, the thought that, you know, that you can't have four speedy lines, or, you know, like, you need a fourth line that has some size. Like, it's all these different things that have stuck around forever, and the evolution of these thoughts really just, you know, I think people just get accustomed to what hockey is supposed to be, or their thought of what hockey is supposed to be, instead of an evolution of what the game can be and what, how you can change things. I mean, the idea of something as simple as having one defenseman on a power play, you know, like, it just, yeah. it's things that, you know, like, there's not a lot of risk taken, and they often feel like there's a safe bet in those coaches because they know them and they've had somewhat track records in the past.
The funny thing is, though, I mean, hiring Mike Babcock was the riskiest hire you could possibly
made. Yeah,
he's been out of the league for 4 years, and he was run out of the league because he treated players poorly.
No, they don't.
Did these stupid mind games with them.
Yeah,
and it's funny because if any other coach had done this, probably wouldn't have been that big of a deal. Like, it's not that bad idea. Way to get to know your players is, hey, let's show me some pictures of your family, yada, yada, yada. Like, if anyone else had done that, it probably wouldn't have been so weird. And it probably would have been done differently. You know, like, where, hey, you pick out a few photos and bring them into to work tomorrow and then tell me about your family. Like, that's fine. Get to know your players. That's great. Maybe. I like that.
I don't know. Even that's kind of just strange. Like, that stuff happens more naturally. Maybe, like, you know, how, you know, like, I don't know. Like, you talk to someone, you have a conversation, if their family comes up, like, I don't know. I just, it feels like these boundaries that just, that don't, like, me as a player has nothing to do with what my family's like, or, you know, like, you just, like, you create a relationship, you create a friendship or a trust where the conversation evolves. Like, all of a sudden, if you're asking people for their pictures or their family, or just things that, yeah, I don't know, like, everyone's different, you know, like, I mean, certainly you and I are different in the things that we share on Twitter or whatever, like, it's just, everyone has their own comfort yeah. zone. So I don't think you push that. So I think it was all strange, you know, like, nothing, there wasn't enough to be gained by doing that instead of making someone uncomfortable. And you know, I'm sure Mike Babcock's head, he thought this was normal and safe, but yeah, it's
the idea of just like, take, you know, hey, set up your phone so that I could scroll through your pictures on the big screen. That's just,
yeah, like it's like, yeah, to think that I think was there a good many idea, levels of God. Creepiness, and he and he got to a very far level. Question from Brooklyn Corn: what can we learn about the Blackhawks in the upcoming preseason, or what should we watch for in the preseason?
I think I want to see how Luke Richardson plans to use all these veteran guys he has, the Foligno's and mm-hmm. Blackwell's and Donato's, because we saw last year that as forward thinking as he can be as a coach, he did the hockey thing of always kind of leaning back on the veterans. And, you know, when he had a scratch someone, it was usually a young guy in favor of some veteran who was just kind of there because he's kind of that safety blanket. Joel Quenneville had a lot of the same tendencies early on. I'm curious to see, like, do they see a Ryan Donato as a piece? Or is he just a guy in Colin Blackwell? And, you know, how much run are they going to give the prospects, the young guys, the guys who are ready to break through? And how much are they going to still be leaning on kind of these stopgap veterans? Because no offense to Ryan Donato or Corey Perry or Colin Blackwell, that's not who the people are paying to see.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's it is interesting because they have all these young, these old guys they've brought in, and it's, yeah, you don't want to put three of those guys on the same line, and they've all brought in for different purposes. So it'll be, it'll be interesting to see how he sort of, puts those guys in different roles. The next question was about Shane Wright, which I don't know enough about the situation, but it was a question about, is there any chance Krejcikin can get a CHL exception and play in the AHL similar situation with Shane Wright? And I don't know enough about that situation. I'd have to do a little bit more research. From everything I've heard, at least, is the Blackhawks are certainly going to give Krejcikin, you know, a bunch of these preseason games and sort of assess where he's at. I think the preference isn't to send him back to Seattle. They'd like to keep him. They think he's probably ready. And they sort of want to gauge it from there. I wouldn't be surprised if they burn the contract, because I think it benefits them in the long run with all these other contracts. There's I guess that's something they could look into to see how he's playing and what he wants to do.
I'm also not so sure that you would want Kevin Korchinski in the AHL. It's such a dump and chase league. It's a little rougher. Like, I think you'd almost, if you had no choice but to keep him in junior or the AHL, I'd rather have him in junior just tearing shit up in a high scoring league and doing what he does best rather than chipping and chasing in the AHL.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess if you're just getting those, like, if you can play him 20 plus minutes, like, the, you know, like, you probably don't want him down there forever, but if you can put him in opportunities that he can't get in the NHL, I think there's some, there's some upside to it. But yeah, I haven't heard of that possibility, and I don't know enough about the Shane Wright thing to speak to it.
Couchman do ask if the Athletic can add a mute user option to the comment section. I think that's a great idea.
Oh God!
But here's the thing. You pay your subscription fee, you're allowed to say what you want in there, but that's something me and Scott talk about a lot. You don't have to read them. You don't have to go down there. You could stop when we stop.
I love the comments. The comment section when the Athletic started was just, it was great. It was a small community. It was people who we just had the Blackhawks or just a couple of teams there for a while. And so it was people that wanted to be in that comment section.
And they were long, thoughtful, like, interesting analysis.
And there's some of that still in there. It's just, it's become, and certainly everything that happened with Kyle Beach and all that's it's changed the tone. And certainly whenever we bring up the logo with, you know, things go awry in there pretty quickly, but it's also that there are a lot of other fan bases that go in there. And when we have stories nationally, especially with Connor Bedard, that there are a lot of fan bases that click in there. And all of a sudden the first week
it's rookie camp and they're complaining that we're writing about Connor Bedard too much.
Yeah. I know someone wanted me to write about Adam Fantilli and then people are taking shots at the Blackhawks and all the power to him. Like, I'm not here to defend the Blackhawks, but it's not the comment section's there to, like, it's supposed to be originally designed, and the reason they like to keep it because it creates discussion and it certainly keeps people engaged in it and it makes people feel a part of a community.
I mean, we've got like 3.5 million subscribers now. There's going to be some assholes. That's just kind of what it comes down to, is the bigger we get, the more assholes we let in, and sometimes they just kind of take over.
Yeah, and that's one thing. It's the personal shots at it, whether it's players and us or what. Or when people just start bickering at each other, and there's people who've sort of got known reputations in the comment section, and just the Athletic is fully aware. We're fully aware that it can be a dumpster fire in their time. So, I know people ask questions in the comment section, and we do go in there sometimes for certain types of stories where it's not. Yeah, every time I come out of the comment section, I feel worse about myself. But there's stories that we do go in there and we can interact a little bit. But I think the best way to still interact with us is, you know, we'll try to do mailbags and do Twitter questions and stuff. I think there's a better, thanks for
the. I'm on Twitter all the time, although I miss TweetDeck. It's a lot harder to find everything without TweetDeck. God, I
you know,
miss
the people who came out to our get together, and you know, we'll try to do stuff that we can just still create community where it's not always have to be based on the comment section, because it's hard to. It's hard to kind of filter through some of it. So, yeah, I think for me that's one of the things about this season is I like to get the Athletic, especially RB, kind of back to where it was a little bit, where it does feel like, you have more interaction with fans. And certainly I think there's some stuff with the podcast coming up that we'd like to kind of adapt to that too. So, I think that's on our mind. And if anyone ever has ideas how we can better do that and interact with you, we'd certainly be up for it, because we don't the only reason that we don't interact in the comment section is just because it's painful at times. So,
well, my fantasy hockey team name is the Soy Boys with a Z at the end. So,
oh, really? Fantasy hockey for you, huh?
Yeah, Scott Wheeler started up an athletic league. I'm going to get my ass kicked because it's like all the smart people on staff and people that have more free time than I do because they don't have two kids and a puppy running around. So I'm going to get just obliterated, but I figured I'd give it another go. I don't like fantasy hockey.
It's too much work.
Like fantasy football is fun because like once a week you got to go in and do a little bit of work. Right.
Yeah.
Fantasy hockey. It's same thing with baseball and basketball. It's just every goddamn day. I just lose interest. So I'm gonna probably finish dead last.
My guess is that this will be your last season doing.
My first and last.
Yep. I don't know. Someone asked me recently about doing fantasy hockey with other Blackhawks beat writers and some other people. Once I gave up doing fantasy football, like my life changed. I feel like I got something. I got this time and this everything back to me that I didn't have, and it's
the saddest thing I've ever heard, Scott.
It becomes like you all of a sudden you're watching. Like, the funny thing I found out when I stopped doing fantasy football is that I don't really like the NFL that much. Like, my fandom for the Bears has kind of waned over the years. And I don't watch football much. I don't care.
I'm in a good spot football wise. I grew up a Giants fan, so I like the Giants, but I really enjoy watching Bears games because I like being part of the conversation. Again, harder without TweetDeck, but there's nothing more fun than a Bears game because all of Chicago. Everyone is watching the Bears game. Like, whether you like football or not, you're watching the Bears game. There's something fun about that.
It's a perfect opportunity to go like grocery shopping or something. It's when the Bears. I keep an eye on it, but I don't.
There's so little monoculture left. Like, you know, an old like Game of Thrones Sunday night HBO where everyone's watching the same thing. Like, I like that about the Bears games, but I also don't really care that much. Like the Giants had this amazing comeback yesterday and won, and it was cool. I'm like, hey. That's cool. But I also didn't care when they were down 28-7. I've seen 4 Super Bowl wins in my life. That's probably a big reason for it. 2 as a kid, 2 as an adult. It's like the best breakup you could have. So like whatever the Giants do is gravy for me. And I would prefer them be good, but it doesn't kill me anymore when they're bad. Like that's a nice sweet spot of fandom. I want to live and die by it.
I don't know if it's just I don't balance things as well as I did, or just I certainly become more of a soccer fan, so I'll watch more of that. And certainly when the Cubs are playing well now, that the Cubs aren't playing well right now.
They're not. The Mets are keeping them alive by beating all the teams they're competing with.
But the fact that the Cubs are in a playoff race, like I feel like I spend more time watching that. And I paid for the Marquee app and all those things. So and then just having kids. But yeah, I honestly don't watch a ton of football. I
still like watching football. I'm a goddamn
American. I used to be that guy that would yell the Bears at the TV, and
I do miss those. That's what the Mets are for me. I can still yell at the TV at a Mets game.
Yeah. Let's see what else we got here. From Patrick Clemens, what are your thoughts about the team? Do you think they will finish in the bottom five or be semi-competitive and finish just outside of the playoffs? Also, what do you think about all the veteran additions? Do you think their mentorship will make an impact on the young players? I still tend to think that they're going to finish toward the bottom of the league. I guess it'll be interesting to see if they are semi-competitive. I think the first month of the season will have a better indication of some of that. And some of it relies on, Soderblom, I think we know what Mrazek is as a goalie. I think Soderblom has, the Blackhawks think he has a high ceiling, and he certainly showed it at times in Rockford. His overall numbers weren't great, so there were times where he was really stellar. And, even down the stretch last season, they played him 3 days, three consecutive days. Like, they trusted this guy, and often he stepped up. So it just mattered, can he do it? He looked good in the NHL last year too, but it was just about the consistency over time where it weighed on him. So I think he's such a key to this where, you might be able to score some goals, and certainly Bedard changes that, and if Hall can emerge, but can they defend? And, they still have, Jones, Murphy, and Tenorti are all fine defensemen, but their guys have also struggled, giving up goals and over the years too. They were on the ice for plenty of goals last season. So I think then you're throwing a bunch of new guys into the fire for the defensemen too. So you're going to expect some mistakes. So defensively, I think that's the biggest concern for the Blackhawks, is just not giving up a ton of goals and whether they can score enough.
I think it'll be a lot like last year where they're more competitive than we probably thought, but in the end, they'll still wind up in the bottom five. I mean, you look around the league, there's not a lot of truly horrid teams anymore. There's a very big mushy middle. Like, you look at the Western Conference and you've got your Dallas and your Colorado and your Vegas. And then there's just a whole bunch of teams that are okay. Your Blues, your Wilds, the Coyotes are going to be halfway decent this year, I really think. And there's a lot of teams like that that are just pretty good. There's like 10 or 11 teams in each conference that could theoretically make the playoffs. So even if the Blackhawks are competitive, they're not going to be good enough to kind of like hang with a lot of these. I think they're still going to wind up towards the bottom, but I think you'll be, as a Hawks fan, you'll probably be relatively pleased with their effort night in, night out. They're going to score. I think they'll be a little more offensive minded this year. I think they'll be fun, but they'll go on little runs where they win a handful of games in a row and they start looking really good. And then they'll look just putrid for a few nights in a row. It's going to be a lot like last year. And in the end, that's going to wind up with like 70 points and a bottom five thing.
Yeah, I don't even know if they're a better team than last season. Like, all of a sudden, you lost.
I don't think they really are, but
it looks different because all of a sudden you're thinking, well, they add Bedard and Reichel and all these interesting pieces. But at the same time, you've lost Domi and Kane and you lost all your top goal scorers from last year. So it's not like you're adding these guys in addition to what you already had. The upside of those guys is probably higher, but I don't know if they reach it right off the bat in season one. So I think Domi had a pretty good season. Kane put up numbers. Like, you had guys that had, someone has to score goals and the Blackhawks will score enough goals, but can they exceed what they did last year? I don't know. That puts a lot of, NFCU has to be better than he was last season. And, Radish had a pretty good year last year. I mean, he was close to 20 goals, right? But it's the guys taking another step, because you had some guys who had some decent numbers last year. So, I don't know. I think on paper they're more interesting, but I don't know if they're better than a team than last season. So it'll be fun to watch. I think you can see at least where the potential is, where last year, even when they were at their best, like you just weren't going to get enough probably. So. I don't know. Did we miss anything else?
That about sums it up.
I think so. Training camp. Kyle Davidson speaks tomorrow.
Opens Thursday, so we'll probably be back Thursday. Here early next week with our initial impressions of camp.
Yeah.
3-a-days, baby. It's time.
No, 2-a-days.
Oh, it's only going to be 2?
That's what I was told, 2-a-days.
So. Oh, that's great. Yeah. 3-a-days is rough. 3-a-days is too much hockey.
So, yeah, 10 a.m. on Thursday, I'll be out there, and then there'll be 2 groups. And I think first preseason game is a week from Thursday, maybe. So yeah, it'll be he'll be here quick, and as we always say, we're gonna try to do more podcasts, and early in the season we're better than that than later, so we will we'll try to keep up with it at least. So for Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Laz and Powers. We'll talk to you soon. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.